Welcome to Within the Realm. I'm your host, Steve Garrett. Today we'll be covering the subjects of a very special phone booth somewhere in Arkansas, and the unusual connection between three cowboy performers that spanned five continents. But first, let's talk about phone booths. Phone booths used to be on nearly every busy street corner. Long before we carried our phone in our pockets, our parents made sure we had plenty of change in case we needed to call them. Let's head to a very special street corner down in Arkansas. David Parks had a dilemma on his hands. He's the president of the local family-owned telephone company in Prairie Grove, a small town in northwest Arkansas. The town has a slow-paced southern feel and is known mostly for its preservation of a Civil War battle site, antique stores in the old downtown buildings, and an annual craft fair. For David Parks, an easy call, no pun intended, had become a difficult decision. It was 2014. Over the previous weekend, a driver, drowsy from preparations of a yard sale the day before, had fallen asleep, left the road, and demolished a phone booth. The driver was not injured. This particular phone booth was the last phone booth operated by the company. At the time, it was believed to have been only one of two working phone booths in the state of Arkansas. The phone booth in this day of cell phones was rarely used. The company only sent an employee out twice a year to collect the coins in the payphone, and considered it a good year when they hauled in more than $5. Parks himself drove past the booth twice daily and didn't realize the thing had been demolished until he was told at work. It should have been an easy decision to retire a damaged, less than profit-making relic of a bygone era, but here's some background. Prairie Grove is a town just outside of Fayetteville, Arkansas, with a population under 5,000. It's home to the Prairie Grove Battlefield State Park, one of the most intact Civil War battlefields in the nation. Even though the quickly growing urban center of Fayetteville is stretching closer to the little town, it hangs on to its small town feel. That's part of what was making things difficult. Telephone service in Prairie Grove began in 1888. When one of the town's physicians, Ephraim Graham McCormick, strung a telephone line from his downtown office to his brother's pharmacy across the street. Demand for the service grew, and in 1906, the Prairie Grove Telephone Company was incorporated. They boasted a switchboard and a one-page directory. Dr. McCormick's great-grandson, David Parks, now runs the phone company. It is one of a very few remaining family-owned telephone companies in Arkansas. The company grew throughout the years, surviving wars and the Depression, in part by never disconnecting a phone for non-payment. According to a company history, it routinely accepted payments in the form of eggs, produce, and the occasional cow. Rural telephone companies, like Prairie Grove Telephone Company, are part of an endangered breed in this ever-changing digital age, grappling with challenges that include the move away from landlines to cell phones and the decline in the fees collected for long-distance calls, and moving away from the operation of telephone booths. Other businesses, bigger businesses, may have considered that the sleepy driver did them a favor by eliminating a losing proposition. Not so for this family business. Many in town felt the phone booth was a landmark and a reminder of a much simpler time. It soon became the subject of a Facebook campaign to restore the phone booth back to the southwest corner of East Douglas and Parker Streets. One of these folks was Susan Parks Spencer, a board member for the Prairie Grove Telephone Company and, a cousin of the president, David Parks. With a borrowed trailer, Susan and others collected the pieces of the phone booth and delivered it to the phone company warehouse in hopes that David would go against sound business thinking and restore the booth. There was something special about the booth. To be precise, it is an airlight outdoor telephone booth developed by the American Telephone and Telegraph Company, AT&T. When the booth was introduced around 1954, advertisements touted it as, quote, something new in telephone booths, end quote. The AirLite outdoor telephone booth was developed specifically for outdoor use. Its construction was durable enough to stand up to the elements, and the amount of glass along with the louvers on the sides allowed its namesake elements, air and light, to flood the booth. It is a structure built out of aluminum with a satin finish. The glass window walls, with a bifold door that folds inward, topped by a red panel marked telephone. It sits upon a small concrete pad with a door opening towards Douglas Street. It measures over 7 feet in height and less than a yard square in width and depth. The roof projects slightly beyond its walls. The interior of the booth houses an aluminum shelf above which is the original telephone. A swiveling directory holder is mounted in the shelf. Advertisements for the AirLite booth also touted the, quote, tip-up directories, end quote, and the ample shelf space for packages and handbags. There is also a fluorescent light fixture mounted in the ceiling. The booth was important in communications in the fact that it was geared towards automobile users, especially in small towns and rural areas, which also represented an evolution from the previous phone booths, which were made of wood and were in more pedestrian locations, such as hotel lobbies, train stations, and drugstores. The telephone company president did determine to return the phone booth to service at its original location, where it stood for over 50 years. This particular telephone booth was installed in about 1960, at the end of the Eisenhower years. It is the last surviving phone booth of the company's original four. The Prairie Grove AirLite Outdoor Telephone Booth was nominated to the National Register of Historic Places. The nomination reads in part, quote, its aluminum construction was an improvement over previous booths, and the glass around it, along with the overhead light, made the AirLite Outdoor Telephone Booth well lit and very comfortable to use, end quote. It was added to the register on November 9, 2015 for its significance in architecture and communications. Although this icon of the rapid changes in technology in the second half of the previous century has been preserved only a stone's throw away from the entrance to the Battlefield Park, no report is available if the company expects to break the $5 mark for paid calls this year. Oklahoma is proud of its favorite son, Will Rogers. He was born on a ranch in the Cherokee Nation, now part of Oklahoma, and eventually rose to fame as an entertainer, writer, homespun philosopher, and aviation advocate. His impromptu observations about happenings of the day, made to hold the audience's attention between rope tricks during the Ziegfeld Follies, were a prototype for stand-up comedy. At the time of his death in 1935, he was the highest-paid film star of the day. But every story has a backstory, or even several backstories. And so does this one. This story begins in Texas following the Civil War. A young former Confederate scout by the name of John Oman Hundrew had made his way west from Virginia, taking up the occupation of cowboy and army scout. He acquired the nickname of Texas Jack. By the early 1870s, he had befriended a fellow scout named Cody, better known to us today as Buffalo Bill. And he began a stint scouting for royal parties from Europe for an American hunt. Eventually, the two made their way to Chicago in late 1872 to star in an early Wild West show called The Scouts of the Prairie, where Texas Jack was the first to introduce trick roping as an act. He soon left Cody and started his own troop in St. Louis, known as the Texas Jack Combination. It at one time featured Wild Bill Hickok as a performer. These Wild West shows took place in theaters and had not developed the large circus atmosphere of the later Buffalo Bill or Pawnee Bill Wild West shows. He also became the hero of several dime novels throughout the years and wrote about his exploits in the West for newspapers and magazines. Thanks to the dime novels, he he became well known on both sides of the Atlantic. On a trip to Leadville, Colorado in 1880, he fell ill and passed away suddenly. His legacy lived on through the dime novels, which continued long after his passing, and due to the Wild West shows. Before the fame and the acting and the dime novels, when Texas Jack was simply a cowhand driving cattle from the plains of Texas, he stumbled upon two young girls and a 5-year-old boy whose parents had been killed by Indians. He took them to safety and arranged for their care. The boy, not knowing his own true last name, began calling himself Texas Jack Jr. After the senior Texas Jack's death, the younger man was given the approval by Omohundro's family to use the Texas Jack moniker as his own in his entertainment career. Texas Jack Jr. said he traveled the world as part of shows before finding himself in England as part of a spectacle entitled Savage South Africa. He even starred in an early war movie depicting battles from the Zulu Wars. By 1900, Texas Jack was in South Africa as head of his own Wild West show and circus. And it was here that he was approached by a young American fresh from failure at setting up a cattle ranch in the Pampas of Argentina. He was looking for work, wrangling the tents and stock of the circus. But Texas Jack was looking for performers. He asked the young man if he could handle a lasso. The young American said he could, and was soon billed as the Cherokee Kid, Trick Roper. The young man was Will Rogers. Bitten with the performing bug, but wanting to head for home, Will worked his way back to the States, performing for a time with a circus in Australia, on Texas Jack Jr.'s recommendation. When he returned home, he became part of an outfit that performed during the St. Louis World's Fair. This was the same St. Louis that just 3 decades earlier, the original Texas Jack had helped establish Wild West shows and trick roping as a staple of American entertainment. Will took his roping act to New York and became one of the featured performers at the Ziegfeld Follies. He broke into films, first silent films and then later talkies, eventually becoming the biggest box office attraction of the 1930s. Had not a string of events occurred, a young cowpoke happening upon a desperate boy, and that desperate boy later employing a young reckless American, showing him the ropes of show business, pun intended, Oklahoma's favorite son may have never found fame. Thanks for stopping by the podcast today. Be sure to stop by our Facebook page, Within the Realm. We'll add some pictures of the phone booth and other information about today's episode. Be sure to like and share. Every little bit helps. You can find us on the web at withinpodcast.com. Our theme music is by 556 and a half. And as always, thanks for listening.